All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.
He's already starting to move now down the backside. He was five or six behind the last horse. Great ground-saving trip by Jose Ortiz. Sometimes when you're that far back, Mike, that everybody makes their decision already, and you're left a lot of open lanes. Now he'll shift him out as he knows he's going to run into trouble if he doesn't, and he takes aim on his brother. And what a tremendous kick by Golden Tempo.
That's a lot of ground to make up in the stretch of the Kentucky Derby. He's seven or eight lengths back at the top of the stretch still.
The numbers on how far he ran are going to be amazing, right? Wow. And this is the pedigree of this horse. He has been dead last or second last in almost every race he's run, but made a charge like this at a moment like this. A historic moment, Nick Luck.
Truly.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! And that right there, everybody, was one hell of a horsey race in Kentucky. Wow, Golden Tempo, the perfectly named horse to pull off a feat I think few of us have ever seen, which is a horse going from the dead last place and charging all the way up to the front and winning the race. That was pretty darn cool. We're going to talk about that more today, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff that happened over the weekend. And it's just you and I today, because I've been getting more emails from people saying, look, nothing against your regular guests and contributors and the orbit of Zabe, as it were. But we love you. We will take episodes where it's just you giving your angle, your thoughts, your opinions, your analysis, and your play calling on stories that I might not have otherwise heard of or thought about on a ZabeCast. So with that said, let's get into it. I want to start with something that nobody is writing about or talking about. And I kind of know why, but it doesn't make it any less depressing. This post is from ZeroHedge.com, and it's headlined, "The Elites and Their Contempt." It's written by Tyler Durden, which is a pseudonym for sure, although it says authored by Reverend John Nogley via the Brownstone Institute. I don't know if Reverend Nogley goes by Tyler Durden. I've seen the Tyler Durden pseudonym. He, of course, was the character name in the great movie Fight Club, played by Brad Pitt. So I don't know who to give credit to this, but this is just where you can find it. ZeroHedge.com, The Elites and Their Contempt. It's about the NFL draft. He writes, last week I was unexpectedly hit with a post-lockdown trauma response. While driving to a baseball game days before the NFL draft came to Pittsburgh, my hometown, I passed a digital highway sign instructing me to avoid non-essential travel. Suddenly, writes, I don't know who to say, Durden or Nogle, suddenly memories of empty highways with signs instructing drivers to, quote, stay safe and stay home, came flooding back to me. As the week developed, it began to occur to me that the parallels were deeper than my subjective emotional response. Road closures intensified, rendering my beloved city of Pittsburgh less and less functional. Even sidewalks were closed for the NFL draft. Entire parking garages were emptied and abandoned. Pittsburgh's most visited museum, the Kamen Science Center, had been closed to the public for weeks because it was within the footprint of the upcoming event. For the actual days of the draft, Pittsburgh public schools were shuttered as if a blizzard had rendered travel impossible. That right there is fucking outrageous. And yet, no one was there to push back or to speak up or to put their foot down and say, no, hell no. Kids in school is essential. We're not letting them out of school for the fucking draft. Maybe some people said that, but there is not nearly enough juice to stop it, which is the point of this entire post. The attempt by local officials, writes Durden, to trigger hysteria and the populace worked, maybe too well. People traveling to Pittsburgh for the event heeded the instructions to use the special free public transit to make their way in. By the way, you probably lost money on that free transit if you're the city. Parking operators expecting a huge windfall saw themselves lower their exorbitant prices by midday. For example, the Rivers Casino quickly abandoned their plan to charge, ready, $250 per day. Parking, lowering their rate to a mere $100 for the first day of the draft, and then abandoning charging altogether for subsequent days. Local businesses outside the official footprint of the event were told to prepare for heavy crowds, but instead they experienced a weekend worse than anything they had seen since the COVID hysteria. Those who didn't want to go to the draft were terrified to go anywhere near the city. So in summary, writes Durden on ZeroHedge.com, children were deprived of education, ding. Small business owners were drastically harmed, ding. Public spaces which exist for the common good were shuttered. And normal life ceased for those who actually live in the city of Pittsburgh, ding. While all this was happening, local politicians were patting themselves on the back for how well everything was pulled off, taking pride that this draft broke attendance records for NFL and that their plans of getting people in and out of the city were effective. It was our own personal Operation Warp Speed. He says, I think there's a lesson here that applies to not merely Pittsburgh politics, but also to the wider dysfunction we see in elected officials throughout what used to be Western civilization. Our political leaders view their own constituents with a sort of boredom or indifference. In the lead-up to the draft, Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania all engaged in a number of public works projects designed to improve the area in preparation for the draft. Honey, the NFL's coming. We need to tidy up. And can you fix the railing on the stairs leading down to the basement? Thank you. Suddenly, writes Durden, our governments remembered that potholes aren't supposed to be allowed to exist and that crime isn't supposed to be allowed to happen. For 3 days, Pittsburgh had a heavily subsidized and highly functional public transit system, something that hasn't existed in nearly entirety of my lifetime in Pittsburgh. Any one of these projects could have been accomplished at any time. But the actual people who lived there provided insufficient motivation for our leaders. Rather, what really mattered to them was looking good in front of millionaires, soon to be millionaires, and the powerful elites who would gather to party the night away with Nelly, Steve Aoki, it's a DJ, and 2 Chainz, rapper. Meanwhile, the elites themselves seem to view the common people with at least implicit contempt. They desire entire blocks to be shut down for their own amusement. The common man, including those who wait upon them, should be relegated to buses or walking so as not to encroach upon their experience. This is their party, and the city is lucky to have them here. He concludes by asking the urgent and pressing question that faces all of us. What is the political solution in a system where elected officials conspire with elites to hold the voters themselves in contempt? And my answer to that is, I don't know, and I am sad to think nothing will change, because nobody really stepped up, stood up, and pushed back and said, no, enough of this bullshit. And of course, don't expect the commissioner to step in and go, ho, ho, ho. We want to come to Pittsburgh. We want to do a nice draft. We want to have some public viewing area. But I mean, if you're talking about closing schools, no. No, we can't do that. And hell, if you're going to cause such a drop in typical business for the small businesses around the draft footprint, you should at least pay them off. At least say, show me your last 3 years, if you've been in business that long, of your typical late April week-to-week numbers. We'll just write you a check right now. But of course the NFL is not going to do that, and of course the commissioner is not going to step in and go, okay, you know, we don't need to be this big. But the NFL makes a lot of money on the draft. Yeah, they do, but kinda. They make more money just running the league and playing the games and selling them to television and selling them to other countries. The draft is a tiny pie slice of the NFL's overall revenue. And yet, they seem compelled to just, we got to make it bigger. Bigger and bigger, and what a spectacle. And their argument is, but the fans love it. Look at all the people that showed up. Sure, it was free, and they did show up, and maybe they had a good time. Nobody ever really polls the fans afterwards to go, okay, so you spent all this time going down there to the draft. How was it? Would you go again? Well, luckily, I'm not sure if they've been back to another outdoor draft city to compare how did it do the first time versus the second time. And at some point, this will level off and start to decline as people are like, why are we going to this thing? But the elected politicians and the teams that want to host this thing fall over themselves to do it. And they will conspire with those in office to make it happen. And it's bullshit. And I'm glad that this guy wrote this post, because it does make you think, why? The NFL can have this thing in any large size venue, like Radio City Music Hall. Or if you want to take it around the country, then you could hold it in whatever Pittsburgh's equivalent is of that kind of thing. You could hold it in basketball arenas, dress it up real nice, sell tickets to get in, which would be a lot less than the huge crowds that show up, but sell them for an appropriate amount, have a secondary market. If people really want to get in, they can pay double or triple the face. Get your hotel rooms on your own fucking dime, NFL. And exist within a normal city's tempo, like any other convention or baseball game or hockey game or basketball game. Because this isn't even as exciting as a single hockey game. It's just the fucking draft. They could do that, but they won't do that, because the NFL is in a constant cycle of whipping their dick out, showing everyone how big it is, watching how quickly the elected officials in city to city to city jump and say, oh, we'll do free transit. How about that? We'll shut off three blocks of downtown. Oh, don't worry. These small businesses, they got no clout. They got no constituent power. Screw them. We don't care. What, are we going to get unelected because of this? Yay, party! Next year, it's in Washington, D.C. I'm sure. The District of Cumumbly. That's a reference. If you know it, you know it. If you don't, I can't explain it. You know the District of Cumumbly is going to bend over, whip off their pants, just like all the other cities. And I'm assuming the same dynamic will happen as well. At least the National Mall is used to big events and used to big crowds, more so than other cities where they have to shut down entire blocks, but still. and we in the media, and I'm part of it, have to pretend like this is a big fucking deal. The station I was at previously when Green Bay had the draft, we had people work for over a year on our draft plans and coverage. Where is our broadcast position? What are we going to do? Our station decided to rent a house for all of us personalities to be up at during the draft, even though we weren't anywhere close to being able to broadcast at the draft. The house cost us a lot of money, a lot for a radio station that didn't have money and ended up folding for music, $25,000, $30,000, something like that. Bullshit. And we've got to be part of the industrial complex, the draft industrial complex, and talk about how great it is. Oh, man, look at all the people. I mean, yeah, a lot of people show up, and you can't see anything, and you can't fucking hear anything, and there's porta potties that are disgusting, and there's beers that are $15, and they read names of linemen you've never heard of. Okay. Felt like that needed to be said. The elites and their contempt, zerohedge.com. Go find it, read it yourself, share it amongst others. Okay, on to happier things. How about that fucking horsey race, huh? That was spectacular. Golden Tempo, out dueling everybody down the stretch, coming from the back of the pack to win horse racing's biggest event and to vault trainer Sherry DeVoe to a perch that is now occupied for the first time by a woman. That is a woman winning the Kentucky Derby. A woman trainer, let me say. Good for her. Good for the horse's owners to say, you know what? She can do a great job. You know, these horse trainers, they're fascinating to me, and I only know enough to be dangerous about what it takes to be a good horse trainer. Obviously, guys like Bob Baffert, legendary horse trainer. Who else can I name off the top of my head as a horse trainer? Not sure. But, you know, they have to be in tune with the horsies. They have to be able to know how to work them out, when to work them out, when to ease off on them, how to watch out for injuries, to talk to the veterinarians and their horse doctors, talk to the jockey, connect with the jockey, how we running, how we riding, what's our race strategy. They really are the trainers really are the linchpin to the whole thing. And the trainers have to manage up and manage down. They have to talk to the jockeys, who are technically beneath the trainer, and to get feedback from the jockey. And maybe the jockey's not doing a good job with the horse. Maybe the trainer has to say, you know what? We got to go with somebody else. That's managing down. And they have to manage up to the owners, to the really rich people. When the rich guy's like, man, we bought this horse for $1 million. How come it's not winning any races? And as the trainer, you have to balance the whole, I'm going to tell them the truth, part of the truth, a shade of the truth. How do I position this? Because I want to keep training this horse. So then you get to the big day, and your horse is a 23-1 long shot, and it's just sitting way in the back like that. And then, like, it was hit by a bolt of fucking lightning. It starts powering up and powering through and basically around the entire field. Just incredible. I love the horsey to horsey interview afterwards. Donna Barton is the name of the woman who has conducted this horseback interview after the Kentucky Derby, and I believe at the other Triple Crown races, for something like 30 years. She's retiring after this year. So this was her last Kentucky Derby horsey to horsey interview. It's just so cool. There's no reason why they couldn't go park the horse over on the side, get the jockey off of it, have them stand there, and then you interview them. Nah, let's let the horse cool down on the track, and while we're cooling down the horse, let's go ahead and just ride on up. Is Donna Barton looking great in her white suit, her white pantsuit, microphone, the goggles on her helmet, even though she didn't really need the goggles because she wasn't racing, but they were still there. Also, I am completely fascinated by the way the jockeys have the stacked goggle system so that when their first pair of goggles gets too much mud on them, they can just zoop, peel it off, and there's six more goggles underneath. Like, you're on a horse. how deft does your fingers need to be able to peel off just one Pringles potato chip of goggles, and then do they just throw them? What do they do with them? Do they throw them behind them like a beer can out the side of a truck? Yeehaw! Fascinating to me. But the emotions from Jose Ortiz, the jockey, tears streaming down his face, calling Saturday's win a dream come true. Obviously, every jockey wants to win the biggest race in the world. He also won the Oaks on Friday, the second biggest race of Kentucky Derby weekend, which was carried in prime time for the first time ever and got great ratings. Also, this Derby got the highest ratings ever for the Derby. It was up 11% from last year. Has to be taken with a grain of salt. They've changed the Nielsen way of capturing audience numbers, and ratings have been pretty much up across the board in all sports because of it. But it's still a huge, strong number. And obviously the race lived up to it as well. I love the emotions. I love seeing the shots of DeVoe and her sister. I think it was her sister, her family there. She's like leaning up on the railing inside the final stretch, watching her horse come down the stretch. Her feet are off the ground. She's kicking the wall like a little kid, just so excited. The tears on the jockey's face, knowing how big this moment is for him. Also, I sort of love this about horse racing is that, you know, you've got all these stratas of wealth, and they all coexist happily, understanding, hey, and I, you know, the jockeys get paid a lot, by the way, so they're not hurting, but, you know, to get paid a lot as a jockey, you've got to do a lot of horse racing at a lot of lower levels where you don't get paid shit and is brutal on your body. Dangerous. Jockeys die doing it. But, you know, you got the jockeys. Trainers do well, but they're not the big swinging billionaire dicks that own these horses or the syndicates or the Saudi princes. But it's all got to come together in one ecosystem, and they all work together. It's great. It's great. So I'm looking forward to seeing whether or not Golden Tempo can complete the second round of the Triple Crown coming up at the Preakness. What? Oh, yeah. Apparently, they're not committing Golden Tempo to race in the May 16th Preakness in Baltimore because this is kind of how it goes these days. They tried to entice horse owners to race him in all three to try to go for the Triple Crown with a $5 million bonus. I believe it was $5 million, something like that. It's not enough. If the race doesn't fit the horse, if you're worried about the horse getting injured, if you got other plans for the horse or whatever, it's obviously a long shot. The romantic thing is for every Derby horse to make sure to try to win that second race, the Preakness, so then we can build up to the whole, oh my God, I got to watch the Belmont, see if this horse can win the Triple Crown. But the Derby was well done. Mike Tirico. Is there anything Tirico does poorly? Is there anything Tirico does in which you say, yeah, you know what? He's not very good at this. We should get somebody else. The answer is no. No, there's nothing he does not do very well. There is nothing he doesn't add an enthusiastic, joyful, informed, super prepared, competent, and wonderful broadcast voice to. That's who he is. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, crap, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid. On to basketball. The Celtics are out as the Eastern favorites, even though they're not the number one seed, they were the betting favorites to come out of the East with the return of Jason Tatum and a 3-1 lead over the Sixers. They shit the bed with a loss on Saturday night to the Celtics. A game in which the they lost the game to the Sixers, and Joel Embiid, who was getting knocked into on his bad knee multiple times down the stretch, Sixers had the big lead. Then the Celtics start to put on pressure. They were hitting some of their threes, but not all of them. You know, the modern NBA, it ain't your dad's game. And some teams, especially depending on what they got personnel-wise handy at the moment, are just going to shoot a ton of threes and hope that the variance works out in their favor, that the odds will even out over time. That was certainly Boston's strategy. If you watch the game, they're coming down the court, and the first decent open three, they're taking it. They're just going to jack it. Didn't matter who, basically, was taking it. They were trying to get that ball in the hands of some of their better three-point shooters, but even lesser guys is like, are you open? Are you outside the arc? Fire in the hole. But Tatum wasn't available because of a late injury. 90 minutes before the game, it was announced. He had knee stiffness. And you can understand why they don't want to risk it, given the fact he missed almost a whole year with a torn Achilles. And the Celtics did not have enough down the stretch, as Maxey was spectacular in the closing minutes, getting to the hole, making big buckets. And so the Sixers are through to take on the Knicks. Here's a stat for you. The Celtics are the first team, according to ESPN Insights, to have three different starters with 0 points in a playoff game since starters were first tracked in 1970 and 1971. I love the fact that they didn't start tracking starters until 1970. Hey, Red, should we make a note of who's starting tonight's game?
Nah. Yeah, it don't matter. Let's get this thing over with. I got a train to Pittsburgh I got to catch.
Celtics first team to have three starters record a zero in the playoff game. They were. Ready? Luke Garza, Baylor Shireman, and Ron Harper Jr. Mm-hmm. Now you know in part why the Celtics lost. They were really down to seeds and stems when it comes to who they had available. Which brings us to Inside the NBA. One of the great enduring things about Inside the NBA is the Gone Fishing graphic, which gets more and more creative all the time, and the boys on set getting to have their fun and tease the teams that are now done playing bouncy ball and are free to go fishing.
Jack Shrink's actually gets older.
And we've got the Boston Celtics, who, after being knocked out by the Philadelphia 76ers,
you guys
are fishing. I see our buddy Bill Simmons in there, John Krasinski,
who's
Mark
the two
Wahlberg.
At the front? I don't know.
Stop it.
I don't.
That on purpose.
Stop it.
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
The two people on the front were Mike Vrabel and, yes, Diana Rossini in a clearly made-up pose, AI or graphics department. Maybe they handmade the graphic. Why would you? Just use AI. Vrabel holding Rossini by the hips from behind as Rossini had her arms stretched out like an airplane, akin to the Titanic scene with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. They went there. When I saw this, I'm like, okay. It is ESPN. You know, ESPN's been very hesitant to sort of even report on this story with Vrabel and Rossini, much less make fun of it. But yeah, wow. Which brings us to the dumbest take you're going to hear in a long time. Jeff Perlman, who has covered the NFL for a long time, is an excellent writer and has really written some good books about various teams in the NFL, including, I believe, the Charles Haley Cowboys and others. He is also, I'll just call balls and strikes here, a hopeless liberal, and it shows through. And he's not ashamed of it. He's quite proud of it. But man, sometimes his thinking brain doesn't work. Because Perlman asked, why does Jay Glazer get a free pass for his intimate relationships with NFL coaches and sources, and Rossini does not? Oh. The comments were gold and did not disappoint. Chad Duke says, let me know when he's blowing Andy Reid Jeff. Probably because he's not fucking them, Jeff. Is there a more whiny-ass bitch in sports media than Jeff Perlman? Lord, this punk is insufferable. Perlman's the guy who sits with all the girls at lunch but never gets to date any of them. Why does Perlman get a pass for inventing storylines that don't exist? Somebody said, I get the angle, but it's false equivalency. Having a good or friendly relationship with subjects that you're covering doesn't compromise integrity unless it's proven that you use that to manipulate stories. Lying, cheating, and sleeping with a subject does compromise integrity. I guess we have to spell out the birds and the bees to Jeff Perlman. When a reporter who's a woman gives a NFL head coach free sex outside of his marriage, that is something of value to the man. Ooh, free sex. Nice. If Jay Glazer is giving something free to Andy Reid or Sean McVay, then you would be within the same zip code, per se, like if he was giving them bottles of whiskey. But there's not that intimate quid pro quo. There is not a relationship that is wholly different from what a professional, I'm a reporter, you're a coach, should be. Like, I want to believe Perlman's smart enough to know how he's missing the boat so badly on this, but maybe he's not that smart. Or maybe his just liberal instincts of, oh, a woman's getting ganged up on, I'm going to come to her defense. How much is Rossini going to be out now that she is no longer at The Athletic? Bobby Burak at OutKick said she made close to $1 million a year from The Athletic. Somebody responded by saying that's preposterous. $1 million a year. There's no way she was generating that kind of revenue. Burak responded by saying you can't simply calculate the number a host's show makes as the, quote, revenue they generate. TV time slots have a base. Quick math, for example, Stephen A. Smith has paid $20 million to host First Take. That time slot would not lose $18 million if he replaced Smith with, say, Peter Schrager for $2 million or less a year. Yes, time slots and platforms have their own intrinsic value. So you can't just say, well, is he or she generating that much money? Rossini was downstream of the fact the NFL is king. You can rewind to the start of this podcast for a dissertation on that. And anyone downstream of that massive NFL shield and what it represents can get wonderfully overpaid, which she was, wonderfully overpaid. And now her prospects of making $1 million a year again are pretty slim. Burak says hardly anyone in highly paid media generates the revenue to justify their salary. The only ones who probably do so are big radio guys like Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, Hannity, Beck, Ramsey. Schefter makes $9 million a year from ESPN. He does not generate anywhere close to that. Oh, no. Schefter is absolutely stealing money. To hockey. The Canadiens are through. They defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning 2-1 in Game 7 on the road, and they do it with just 9 shots on goal. For those of you that don't follow hockey, that is not much at all. Very low. In fact, they didn't have a single shot in the second period. Not a single shot. First time that has happened in their franchise's history. And of the 2 goals they got, they weren't exactly highlight reel, tape-to-tape winners. And as they say in hockey, hey, that's hockey, eh? Sometimes you got to get a greasy one. Sometimes you got to get a dirty one. Sometimes the flow of the ice is tilted heavily against you, but you still win the game. The randomness in hockey is both wonderful from a you never know what's going to happen kind of thing to also frustrating to those who wish there was some sort of order with, you know, I'd like the better teams to advance. Well, in hockey, it's the most variable sport we have in the playoffs, even with best of sevens evening things out because puck luck is real and sometimes it definitely goes against you. There's a great accounting debate going on right now on social media regarding Kelsey Plum. Kelsey Plum, who just signed with, I believe, the LA franchise. Yes, the Sparks. She used to be in Vegas, maybe somewhere else as well. Signed for, notably, $999,000, $999. $1 shy of a million. It's because, at least according to what Kelsey thinks, there's a millionaire's tax in LA, in California now, that she would be subject to, and so therefore she did not want to make $1 million. She wanted to stay $1 underneath that. Here is Ms. Plum explaining this to a recent reporter on their practice court.
Also wanted to ask you about your historic contract, because you left $1 on the board. But was there a significance behind that? Like, was it purposeful? Because I feel like you're very intentional with everything you do.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, taxes.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. If you claim like $1 million, so I say like $13,000.
Oh, wow.
And not claiming a dollar. A lot of people, it's funny, everywhere I go now, people are like, hey, can I give you a dollar? But it's funny because it's like, no, I think it's great.
Yeah.
At least they're tuned in, you know?
Yeah.
But that was one. And the other thing was just like, you know, I just didn't want validation for signing for $1 million.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, like, I don't need to sign for $1 million to know my value as a player.
Yeah.
So
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a combination of
that's
that,
cool.
But really more the taxes.
Okay. Okay. So this sparked a debate. Somebody said, I cannot believe this. Kelsey Plum really thinks if she earned a dollar more, giving her $1 million salary, she'd have to pay an extra $13,000 in taxes. That's not how marginal tax rates work. If she earned a dollar more, yes, she'd be hit with a 13% millionaire tax, but that would be 13 cents on the dollar. Others said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Even though there is such a thing as marginal tax rates, meaning, okay, now you're above $1 million, so everything above $1 million is going to be 13%. There is also some states like New York that retroactively raise the tax you owe on all income once you hit higher levels. They call it recapturing, as in recapturing money that once belonged to you that they now want to give to the state or take it from you. For example, Alex Berenson tweets, New York has a high top individual tax income rate of 10.9% and is one of only two states with a tax benefit recapture provision where the benefit of lower rates is phased out and the taxpayer's top rate is ultimately applied to all income, not just marginal income above a certain level. So that could be the case. Now, I don't know if that's the case in Los Angeles. I do know this. Athlete taxes are complicated as fuck. This guy, Robert Raiola, on Twitter is like the athlete tax guy, the athlete CPA. Sometimes we'll do deep dives and, okay, this guy just signed with so-and-so and he lives in this state. Here's what he's going to have to pay. But it's calculated on how many days you work in other states, and then you're subject to, oh, you played a game in Minnesota, well, their tax rate is this. Oh, you played a game in Seattle, their tax rate is that. Keeps the accountants in business, right? But here's the kicker on all this. Berenson points out that, okay, 13% of $1 million is $130,000. It's not 13,000. So the math was wrong in both directions, in both the understanding of marginal rates and what it was. Also, the other tweets on this are hilarious with people saying, I'm not sure whether or not Plum's people are just dumb and they thought they were saving her $13,000 by keeping it under $1 million, or if Plum's PR team can't convince her that she's wrong about this. And now they're just embarrassed saying, she won't stop saying this. She won't stop bringing this up in interviews. It's that we told her 1 million times, it's not, you were not going to pay $13,000 or 130. It was going to be 13 cents. It didn't matter. I thought that was kind of funny. Somebody else said, how bad is your agent, manager, accountant for letting you even think that a dollar more in your contract saves you $13,000, I bet more likely they're all just robbing her blind. Kelsey, hey, we saved you $13,000 with a slick negotiation. We'll split it with you. Take a $6,500 bonus fee. It's called a win-win. Here's $6,500 for you, $6,500 for us. Aren't we great? I don't know what the actual answer is, and you're probably like, you spent 7 minutes on this. What the fuck, man? All right, let's get to some more interesting things, non-sports, shall we? Headline, Thermos Company. You know, the ones that make the little cylinders to keep your drinks in, cold or hot. Good old Thermos. Over 8 million Thermos jars and bottles are being recalled after three people suffer permanent vision loss. What the what? Permanent vision loss. Of course, I had to click into this, go, all right, what in a thermos could cause you to lose your vision permanently? Well, according to the April 30th recall notice, according to this United States Consumer Product Safety Commission, quote, if perishable foods or beverages are stored in the thermos container for an extended period of time, the stopper can forcefully eject when opened, which can result in serious impact injury and laceration hazards to the consumer. Thermos also shared a recall information on its Instagram story. So they're like, yeah, all right, let's collect all these bottles. The malfunction is due to multiple models of containers missing a pressure relief function in the center of the stopper. Who is keeping food or soup or seafood gumbo in their thermos? Leave it in the back of their car? Ah, I forgot about it. I guess you'd probably open this up and wash it out, dump it out in the sink here. You know, while I'm opening it, let me just go ahead and line it up with my pow! Oh, God! Ah, my eye! My eye! I don't have any thermos containers. Are Stanley mugs still a big thing? Don't know. GameStop. Remember them? They're offering to buy eBay for $125 a share, which would come out to $56 billion. Okay, time out here. Give me a 20, maybe a full. I only remember GameStop being in the news because of the way their stock price is being manipulated by, you know, these internet meme people. And they're like, look, let's get it going. Like, GameStop's this great thriving business. Are you sure about that? All they do is they buy people's unopened NFL 2K games for pennies on the dollar and then sell them for a little bit more than that. How can that be worth a lot of money? Well, apparently GameStop is still around. Apparently GameStop has big ambitions. Apparently GameStop wants to buy eBay. Okay, $56 billion. Darren Revelle tweets, very hard to react to this other than, one, there's got to be more to it, or two, the deal will live or die in the ability to finance the debt alone. I know this, I did just eBay a bunch of shit that I pulled out of my basement, did pretty well, which I'm glad to report, you know. I'd throw stuff up there for $50, $100. Had this old Electrovoice RE27 microphone, which is a very nice studio microphone that I'm not going to tell you where it came from. Might have been Team 980 from 15 years ago. Might not have. I don't know. But it's a microphone. You're not going to tell the difference between this. Sorry. Hello. This Rodecaster Pro microphone, which is plenty fine. Okay. Sorry. Put the wind muff back on it. So I'm like, all right, this is a serious studio mic. It's in good condition. Normally sells for $500, $600. Yeah, I'll put it up there for $150, see what happens. Boop, 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 boop. People bid on it. $186, cha-ching, in my pocket. Had an extra Milwaukee Tools battery-powered hoodie for those in the construction trades, you know? You have to work outside when it's cold. You don't want to wear a jacket, but it's like you want a hoodie that's industrial strength, and it's got a battery pack, so it's got heating elements in it. Had an extra one of those. They were given to me by I forget who. And I'm like $50. Someone in Arkansas bought it. Now, the fees. Who will eat the fees? The eBay fees on some of these transactions, including some of the electronics transactions, are outrageous. But still, I hate eBay. Damn you, eBay. And I also love eBay because it's always a fluid market where, hey, you got some stuff you got to sell? Go ahead and sell it. I know what you're going to say. Dude, has it gotten that bad? I know that, you know, you've been out of work now for over 6 months, and working part-time, doing stuff on JFK, which is great. I heard you there last week. It was great. But really, are you that hard up, your eBay and stuff, to just make ends meet? No, I'm eBay and stuff because I'm bored, number one. Number two, I want shit out of my basement. And number three, why not? It's a game. Now I've got the money to spend on other shit I don't need. Maybe a new camera. Maybe a new DJI Action. No, a DJI Pocket 4. Oh, wait, I can't get that camera because DJI as a company has been banned from the U.S. market. It's not even a drone. It's just a camera. It's a whole thing. Don't get me started. Not sure I need one of those. I got an Action 3. That might be going on eBay soon. Probably like, tell me what your eBay account is. I want to bid on shit just to fuck with you. Oh, no. I'm not going to tell you what. I've got a pseudonym eBay account, so you hopefully will never know it's me. Spirit Airlines could be on eBay, what's left of it. The routes are being plucked clean as it went dark on Saturday morning, 3 a.m. basically. The routes are being plucked up by JetBlue already, especially South Florida. That's a lucrative market. JetBlue wanted to buy Spirit merch. Previous administration said no, be anti-competitive. It's going to cause fares to go up. It's going to be bad for the consumer. Oh, shit, they just went bankrupt. Fuck. Now, would the merger have saved them? I guess. Would it have led to fewer job losses in the short term? Yes. The airline industry is very complicated, and it's very consolidated now as well. And Spirit was an unashamed discount carrier. Not quite as nickel-dimey as Frontier, but still. And yes, it had gained viral fame for some of the most egregious incidents of passengers gone wild. The memes and the jokes and the video compilations of fights at the check-in counter. There was one Spirit flight where the luggage guy is in the belly of the plane. There is a perfectly good, you know, luggage ramp ready to take the bags to just bring them down to the tarmac level so they can be loaded onto the trucks. And this baggage handler had a day. And he's chucking suitcases out the belly of the plane, landing on the tarmac 20 feet below, left and right. Just wing, wing. So what's going to happen to the poors who fly Spirit? When I say poors, I say that tongue-in-cheek. I've flown Spirit, I think, once. In a pinch, it might be all that you can fly, if you don't mind. What's going to happen? Well, either people are going to have to take the Greyhound bus, unlikely, travel less, I doubt that, or suck it up and pay more to get tickets on more civilized airlines. And we'll see how that goes. I know this. Some people are saying, you know, it's good. We really should not be flying all over the place anymore. It used to be traveling was a big deal. It's really only for sort of the upper class. And, you know, the poorest need to stay in their place. Yeah, but so much of our economy is based on domestic tourism. And people saying, oh, I can go here. I can go there. Let's do a weekend over here. I'm all for that, man. I like the Southwest slogan with the seatbelt symbol, bing bong. You are now free to move about the country. I'm down with that. And then we'll end on this. Banana Ball went to Texas A&M and Kyle Field over the weekend, and they knocked it out of the park. And not just knocking it out of the park because left field was about, 135 feet from home plate. And no way to reconfigure the football stadium to accommodate a baseball diamond, so they just sort of made do with the weird field as it is. But it sold out. 106,000, something like that. I don't know what it was, 100,000 fans plus. Quite a night. Weather was lovely. Game was whatever. It was on ESPN at night. I tuned in just for the last four outs, basically. It's a hell of a phenomenon. Now, I got a buddy who pitched in college, and his kids, low D1, one of his sons pitched at Maryland in the Big Ten, so he's a baseball guy through and through. He hates the Savannah Bananas. He thinks it is dog shit. He's like, this is the dumbest thing ever. Of course, he's more of a romantic into, you know, there are single-A leagues and Cape Cod leagues and wood bat leagues that if you just want real baseball, you can go see real baseball at the low organic level. You don't need to see this. I'm neutral on the Bananas. I would never sit in a fucking football stadium with 100,000 people to stare at a baseball game with guys wearing cowboy hats doing backflips just for fun to say that I was there. But you know what? 100,000 people did it. They paid good money to do so as well. And the story of Jesse Cole, the guy that invented the Savannah Bananas and built this business, is incredible. Go see the 60 Minutes piece on him. He and his wife sold their house, went $1.8 million in debt, slept on an air mattress for months in a garage while getting this thing off the ground. They have been offered buyouts and multiple steps along the way, but Jesse Cole still owns 100% of the business of the Savannah Bananas. Now, this prompted a little exchange on one of our text threads. Somebody saying, isn't it great that he's holding on to it, that he's not selling out? And I go, eh. Hadn't sold out yet. PE, or private equity, is circling like a vulture. You know they're going to keep coming with offers and offers. Maybe you can bundle the Bananas with eBay. See if GameStop wants to buy them both since they're so damn rich. But good for Jesse Cole, and if you went to the game down there, let me know how it was. I'm just looking at the photos, and it blows my mind. A silly baseball game with silly rules, some of which I think are hilarious, like fans catch foul balls, it's an out. 100,000 people plus. And the guy that went $1.8 million in debt to finance it, it's like, nope, I'm not getting rid of this. My baby. I'll never relinquish this. God bless him. And also, where do you find a wife that is that ride or die? That's the kind of wife that is worth everything in the world. Good for her, good for him, good for the Bananas. Oh my, look at the time. Why, I just talked and talked and talked for 48 minutes. I think I did a pretty good job. I ran you through a bunch of different stories, gave you some opinions, read from some stories that you may not have otherwise found. I hope it was not too tedious. I hope I injected some of my own opinions to break up the monotony of just reading. I hope I gave it some hope that you appreciate that I gave it some inflection and emphasis that a good professional broadcaster does to liven up a dry article, perhaps. And we'll do it all over again tomorrow because that's what we do here on the Zabecast. Have the regular run of guests due up this week as it's Live Week in D.C. That's right. The Dying Golf Tour is coming to D.C., technically Northern Virginia, Sterling, Virginia, where I used to live, just down the road from where I am now, and could be one of the last live events. So I've gotten a credential. I'm going to try to do the golf show from the event. I need to talk to their PR people to see what kind of permissions, what kind of setup I'm going to have. Who knows? So could be a big week. Temperatures are spring-like. They're a little chilly. I'd like them to be warmer, but still. It's chilly around much of the country right now as we turn to this first weekend in May. Spring is coming. Summer after that, it's going to be a banger. Thank you for listening. Spread the word. Rate and review. That's what I wanted to say. Rate and review as it tickles the algorithmic overlords. Thanks for listening. Have a great Monday, and we will see you next time.
Promise is something for everyone. Set a course for adventure, your mind on a new romance.
You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint, that's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball.
That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play. Plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.